Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the real hip hop. Hip hop.
The real. They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with Huntsville's Michelle Watkins. Michelle, a former educator, has entered the Huntsville City School Board District 1 race. Michelle attended Alabama A&M University and has a master's in secondary education, business education. Watkins, a former secretary of the Johnson Alumni Association and former school teacher, stresses the need for transparency and accountability in District 1. Watkins says she's a voice for children and that it takes a village to raise a child and it takes a village to educate a child, and says that she's all about the children and it's not about her. If elected, Watkins plans to organize more mentor groups for at-risk youth and hold more community forums. Good evening, Ms. Watkins. How's it going?
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. First off, I want to say I had a chance to hear you speak for the first time yesterday at the Unity Rally, and I was very impressed, and we need more voices speaking out in the community, just as you did. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and the reasons you want to run? Then I'm going to ask you a couple of things, your take on a few things.
Sure. First of all, let me thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak on your radio show. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. I'm a lifelong resident of North Huntsville, and I graduated from Johnson High School several years ago. I won't tell you when because you'll have my age. But let's just say I'm seasoned.
Okay.
I graduated from Johnson and graduated from one of the best institutions in all of the United States and America, and that's Alabama A&M University.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, it is. And I taught at Johnson High School, and I was offered an opportunity to work for Department of Army. And because of the politics inside the school, I felt I could do more outside of the school. So when I left Johnson in 2009 to accept the position with Department of Army, I still stayed back and volunteered at Johnson, which I have been doing since 2006. I'm in my 10th year of helping at Johnson. And
That's great.
The reason why I help at Johnson more so than the feeder schools is because I can relate to the, you know, young adults and the teenagers. And they have such a need for people to listen to them, to hear them, and want to help them. So I stayed back and helped at Johnson this past year. I was PTA president. And just want to run for school board mainly because North Huntsville doesn't have representation that represents our needs right now. You know, we need positive black male role models in our schools. A lot of our black male teachers have been let go or they have been forced out. Our children see a lot of people that's not used to dealing with them and don't have a grip on discipline and how to relate to our kids. And that's the reason why Huntsville City Schools right now, North Huntsville, has a lot of discipline problems. I'm also running because I want the community to be able to participate and have a voice. It's very important for the community to be able to do that. And right now the community has not been allowed to come inside the school and be a part of, you know, the education process with the kids. And more importantly, the main reason I'm running is the scores. Academically, the students are not performing to the level that they should be. Currently, Johnson has a reading proficiency score of 19%. And we all know only 19% of the kids are reading at their level. We have a problem. And we're going to have a bigger problem when they leave school. So I'm going back trying to get involved actively with the education portion, and that's why I'm running.
Okay. First of all, I want to ask you this right here. What do you make to your opponent's claims that the scores have soared since she's been in office?
They have. Well, PTA meeting where the former principal back in November told myself and several other people that attended PTA meeting that the average ACT score at Johnson was 15. Now, if you have kids with a 4.0 GPA, but they're making a 15 on the ACT, something's not right.
No, it doesn't add up. Okay,
so,
what are some of the ideas that you would have to try to increase these scores? I mean, what would be some new things that you would try to increase these test scores?
Well, first and foremost, we have to focus on reading because
uh-huh.
You know, reading is the foundation for all of the subjects. If the kids can't read, they can't comprehend. And I'm not saying they can't read. I'm saying they're not reading on the level that they should be reading on academically. So we need to implement some reading programs into the schools. We need to get reading implemented more into the classroom. The average teacher spends their time teaching tests at Johnson. They focus more, not just at Johnson, but Huntsville City Schools, period. They focus on teaching, taking a test. Mm-hmm. That's not teaching content. They need to know content. They need to know how to read. They need to know how to write. They need to know how to, you know, take tests. But at the same time, if you're teaching them tests every day, you're teaching them content, they're not retaining any of that information.
I happen to agree with you on that. And I told someone once that college really doesn't learn you anything. It teaches you where to go get the information. And taking a test is not going to determine how intelligent you are. Your intelligence will be determined by if you know where to seek the information. You've got to be able to comprehend the information. You got to know where to get it and how to comprehend it. Anybody can pick up something. And I did it in high school, and I hate to say it, but I did it a couple of times in college as well. I could not even study for the test until the night before and just remember it over and over and over and over and then just replay it on the test. But after the test is gone, the information is gone. If I didn't really go and research and comprehend the information, you can use it right then, and then that's it. We got to do more than just take tests. Okay, so, and the next thing I wanted to ask you about is tell us a little bit about this teacher situation, because I asked your opponent about that, and she gave me an answer that they were certified. I don't think it's the certified that you're talking about, but it's some other type of training that they attend instead of getting the real certification. Okay, tell us the problems you have with that, the real certification versus a course that they take.
Well, this is what it is. A teacher can get whenever you hire someone, they can get an emergency certificate. An emergency certificate is a certificate that's extended to you through the state, and you're given it for a certain amount of time, and I think it's a year up to 2 years. And what they do is after then, you have to become certified, or they have to ask for an extension on the certificate. Whereas a normal teacher, as myself, when we graduate, we have met all the requirements of the Alabama State Teaching Department. And what we do is, after you take that praxis, then they issue your certificate once you pass the praxis. But see, Teach for America teachers that are coming in that are getting these emergency certificates, they're not held to those standards until, 2 years down the road. And that's not what we need in our schools. And see, I don't know if people understand with Teach for America, it was founded under the premises of we went into areas where children, where it was hard to retain teachers, hard to recruit teachers in high poverty areas. That's not the problem we have. We have teachers, and we have a overflow of teachers who want to teach, but Teach for America is associated with the Broad Academy, and I'm not sure if you know about the Broad Academy. Are you familiar with them?
No, I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar enough, but I would like for you to educate our listeners about that.
Okay. The Broad Academy is where Dr. Wardinsky graduated from. It's an academy for superintendents to go to. They go there for like 7 to 9 months. They get certified as a superintendent. But the Broad Academy and Teach for America work closely together. So the Broad Academy, what they do is they want the superintendents to come in and decentralize the neighborhood schools. And if you notice, our neighborhood schools, a lot of them have been decentralized. And they don't believe in a lot of volunteers and community, input. So that is what's happening right now. And Dr. Wardinsky is closely aligned with Teach for America. And the reason why I'm disappointed with my incumbent is because we had teachers in our schools who were teaching our kids, who our kids could relate to, and we had teachers that our kids would come to and see throughout the year. But now, when the kids come back to school, they might see a totally new influx of teachers. Johnson has had at least 6 administrators in the last 8 years. That's not good for our kids. Rotating out and you getting new administrators in, that's not good. They hadn't had, I think Mr. Jones stayed about 2.5 years, and he left in December. Well, when Mr. Jones left, Mr. Tomlin became the acting principal. Well, Mr. Tomlin has since resigned and he's gone. Dr. McDaniels has resigned and she's gone. And Mr. Jones brought them with him when he came from Jackson, Tennessee. Now, they were called the Dream Team, and they were some nice people, and I really believe that they had the kids' best interests at heart and that they wanted to do what was right for the kids. But you don't have control as an administrator over your school. You're directed and delegated what to do from downtown. And that's another reason why I'm running, because principals need to have the ownership of their school. They need to feel like, okay, this is my school. This is what my kids need. I'm here with them every day. I understand their needs. I'm relating with my teachers. We're communicating. We understand what it takes to get the kids educated. That's not what's happening.
And see, I was just going to add to that, and that creates a problem because you got to have time to implement your ideas, and you get a this cozy relationship with downtown may be the reason why now you're going to have the influx of the police into the schools. You can't have a too cozy relationship with downtown. You got to let teachers be teachers.
Exactly. You got to let them be teachers. And that's the problem. Our teachers no longer have the freedom to teach and to, you know, get our kids to be creative, get our kids to learn, and get our kids to want to learn. And when you go in every day and the only thing you're going to do is teach a child how to take a test, you're not going to keep their attention, because kids need creativity. They need different things to do. And that's one of the things that teachers do. You know, they spark that creativity within that child. But when you just teach them a test, you can't be creative taking a test.
No, you can't. And how much, tell me this, how much are the test scores linked with funding? Because if they are closely linked with funding and different programs and grants, then that might be why there's more focus on the test to get the grants and fundings than it is in actually teaching. So how close are the tests related to funding and grants?
Well, I'll tell you this. Title I schools get a lot of funding for students being at a certain income level. So money comes to Title I schools. How that money is used, I'm not sure. I know that Dr. Wardinsky has a close relationship with Pearson, and Pearson supplies textbooks that's on the computers and the testing as well. And what people don't understand is, you know, when you're paying out all of this money, you're saying that this is so great, this technology is working for our kids. Technology is not working for your kids when they go home and they don't have internet. And let's be real, Huntsville, every child in North Huntsville does not have internet at their home. That's a handicap. And see, everything is done on the computers now, so they have to do their homework on the computers. They have to turn in everything and do the tests on the computer. So we're handicapping them, because during the summer when we send them back home, they don't have a computer. So what are they doing during the summer? And we don't have libraries anymore for them to read books. So to answer your question about the funding, I can't really tell you a lot about the funding, because the funding is on lock. You really can't see what they're doing with the funding.
Uh-huh.
And that's another thing we need to be in school, because we need transparency. You know, if it's not for the people and by the people and of the people, then it's against the people. So if you're not doing, as a representative, when you don't have town halls with your community, when you don't engage with your community, when your community is not told beforehand what's going to happen, they're told after the decisions have been made, then you're not doing your community a service.
Okay, let's. No, I was just going to, when you finish your point, I was just going to, I was going to ask you about, because I had asked your opponent about the cyber security, the safety of these computers. And she said that, you know, you're going to have instances where kids can get around the computer, and when they do, they take care of it. And she said something about When kids do that, they try to get them into a cybersecurity class or something to that effect. But a lot of parents have been concerned about the security of those computers. Because even like I told her, even the government computers get hacked. So how are they ensuring the safety of kids with those computers?
Well, first and foremost, I talk to a lot of teachers because I have relationships within the teaching community. And let me just tell you, the teachers complain about how the kids are able to go around the firewalls constantly and get onto websites that they don't supposed to have access to. And this is throughout the day, constant. It's never ending.
Yeah, and she also said, when I asked her about that, she also, I want to add this in there too. She said, in defense of the teachers and the network, I guess, she said that the teachers have something on their computers that they can tell if a student is off task and they're not on the right page. And I thought that was interesting. But she said the teachers would instantly be able to see if the child is off of what they're supposed to be doing. So I didn't know if that meant while they're in the classroom. I mean, is the teacher monitoring that computer device while the child is at home over the summer? I don't think so.
Well, they don't take the computer home with them in the summer.
Okay, so they have them on the weekend or they turn them in on Fridays?
No, they get to keep them weekends throughout the school year, but at the end of the school year, they turn those in.
Okay, so on the weekends, so there's still that question of who's monitoring those computers on the weekend, and do they check them on Monday to make sure that, you know, the student hasn't went to a site that they should not have been in or haven't been doing any cyberbullying or anything? I just wondered how they're being monitored while they're in the classroom.
But here's the thing, Marcus. Our teachers need to be teaching. They don't need to be monitoring what websites you're on. And if you think about it, that's the 30 students, and a student calls you over to help them, and you're at that student's desk helping them, how are you going to monitor what the other 29 are doing?
Yeah, it seems like a heavy task to do. You got a classroom full of people, and you got you're trying to teach the class and also watching for 15 to 20 people, seeing if they're not on the wrong web page or something. It seems like it would add an extra burden to the students. I love technology, and I think we need to introduce technology into the schools, but we got to be very careful and do this thing just right.
And, you know, that's my background, technology, a terrific teacher, and I taught computer classes at Johnson as well. We even had an Oracle class when I was there that I taught. But I will say this, I think technology is great. Kids need technology because they need to be acclimated to technology and understand how to use it. But to solely depend on technology, you know, are we so quick that we want to jump in the race and say, we're first, we did this first, and we're leading the nation, but we're really not leading the nation because we're leaving our kids behind. You know, that to be first to do something is causing our kids to drag behind because, you know, some of the kids, you know, they're not paying attention on the computers. Sometimes I'm hearing that the textbooks are not showing up on the computers and the kids can't do the work. So how are we leading the nation when we have these problems and we're not addressing them or identifying them?
Yeah, a good idea is only as good as it's implemented.
Exactly.
I'm gonna take a short break, and when I come back, I want to ask you about the closing of the Fletcher Seldon Center, and because I pushed this question to her. And I always have a thing about bringing in these organizations that are quick to label people ADHD or to label them criminals. And I want to ask you about the closing of that Seldon Center and what you think about bringing in this organization to that really a lot of people have complained are leaving the kids, not the kids, but leaving the parents in the dark while the school, that organization, and the courts make decisions and make moves on the kids. So on the turn of this break, I'm going to ask candidate Michelle Watkins about the closing of the Selden Center. We'll be right back. Back on Bringing Voices to Power with guest Michelle Watkins, candidate for District 1 School Board. And before the break, I was asking Michelle about the closing of the Fetcher Selden Center, excuse me, and the new organization they have brought in, Pinnacle, I believe it is. They brought them in to deal with students who might be going through some behavioral issues. Michelle, could you tell us about closing the Selden Center, and was that really, I'm asking the question the grassroots is asking, was that really necessary? And couldn't they have enhanced the Selden Center at the same price or maybe even cheaper than they have dealing with this new organization?
Well, I'm really disappointed that they closed the Selden Center, because the Selden Center, you know, it offered an avenue for the children who were suspended, expelled, wouldn't have had an opportunity to graduate, to go to school, receive quality education, and graduate with their class. whereas with Pinnacle, you know, the graduation rate has decreased. They're not providing quality education to our children, and there have been allegations of abuse. We didn't have that at the Fletcher Sheldon Center. So it's a misjustice. It really is a misjustice. They're close to Sheldon.
Yeah, that was one of the main things that I talked to her about, is because I got a lot of people that were telling me that that's what I should mainly talk about, because some parents were feeling that they weren't getting the proper legal representation. Who's going to be representing the child against this center? I mean, you bring a center in dealing with the school. Who's going to represent that child, and are the parents going to have due process? The question is due process, and that's what I think worried a whole lot of people, and we're concerned about the school-to-prison pipeline. And we don't want to get into labeling kids, and we know these behavioral organizations, we know they have contracts with people who sell pills. They're pill pushers. I'm not saying Pinnacle is. But a lot of these behavioral organizations, they get funding and get matching funds for prescribing these different medications. And a lot of times our children, and when it comes to education, our children are not ADHD. A child may be, you know, we got a lot of smart kids out here. Maybe your class is boring. Maybe this kid would be smarter if you focused more on things to do with their hands. If they're constantly moving around, they need tasks and need to be trained in professions and how to use that energy. It's about them not understanding the energy. You're supposed to just sit there, no matter how your hormones are running, no matter how much energy you have. You're supposed to just sit there and be this zombie. And if you be anything other than that, then something's wrong with you.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with teaching. When teachers are in the classroom providing instruction, we can identify students who are gifted. They're bored because they're so far advanced than the other students. We can get the child that doesn't know how to read, and they're acting out because they don't know how to read and they don't want to be embarrassed. See, these are some of the things that teachers are trained to do when you go to an institution and you graduate with an education degree. And see, that has been taken away from the teachers. And you have a lot of new teachers in the school who are inexperienced. They're not seasoned. They don't have the ability to identify those students. And oftentimes, people don't realize we don't have a lot of bad kids in North Huntsville. We have a lot of kids that want attention, that want love. And that's something that teachers give, and something that teachers do. And even at the Sheldon Center, kids that act up and cause problems that were identified as problem children went to the Sheldon Center, graduated, and went on to college. Some of them are success stories. So when we send them to Pinnacle and we just throw them out there and say, okay, go on over there. You know, you're going to sit in the classroom. You're basically not doing too much. And we'll send for you at the end of the year. What is that doing for that child in the long run? Not doing anything for them. It's not helping them be productive.
I'll tell you what it's doing. It's setting them up for the jailhouse. That's exactly what it's doing, or to fail. I mean, it's a recipe for failure if you're not doing anything like that.
And, you know, since we're speaking on closure, I don't know if you're familiar with the tech school that was on Drake Avenue, the Huntsville Center for Technology.
Yes.
You know, it's closed.
Oh, man.
So,
but did they just lose funding, or they just thought it wasn't important?
It's no longer important. Everything is about STEM with them, and every child is not going to be a STEM student. We have kids who are smart enough to be STEM students, but that's not what they want to do. We have kids that are not STEM students, can't perform academically to be a STEM student. So what are we going to do? We tell them, okay, we're going to let you get this diploma, and we're going to send you out the door with no skills. That's not what we're supposed to do. Career Tech was established to give students who would normally not go to a traditional college, give them an opportunity to have a skill So when they graduated, they could go into the workforce prepared to have a viable career. Because, you know, welding, I don't think people know, some welders can make upwards to $75 an hour.
I can testify to that. My brother's a welder. He works for a different company now, but for 10 years, he was a foreman at North Alabama Fabrication, based out of black guy, based out of Coleman. And he traveled all over the U.S. doing big jobs. I mean, they welded part of that big scoreboard that Auburn's got, that's got the biggest one of all the colleges. They welded parts of that. He didn't go and put it in, but they fabricated part of that there in Coleman. And I can just see between him and a lot of his friends that weld, it's a very good profession, and it's one that you can take anywhere. They need to be focusing more on those type of skills, especially for the students, like you were saying. Everybody is not 4-year college material.
No.
Some people are not even, and I think you may can get certified less than the 2-year junior colleges, but people, we need to be targeting those people like that. Now, I also asked her, and I don't think from what she said, they don't have much going, or they don't have a plan once they do, you know, fail the student, because it's the teachers that are failing. If a kid doesn't graduate and he gets out, somebody has failed along the way. And I know there's family circumstances, the family's involved too, but it's up to the teachers. They don't have anything that try to get the kids back. Like, say somebody gets 18 years old or old enough where they can quit, or they just tired of that person and they stop coming to school, and they don't send no truant officer. They just say, hey, we're glad Johnny's not here because he was a problem when he was here. But they don't have anything in place, partnership with the community, to try to do any follow-up. They should have an organization. So, hey, here's a folder with all the students that didn't make it through, let's get them into like some tech training. They should be doing things like that. But like you said, that seems like that's not the focus. And there's a lot of tech things out there. And I mentioned yesterday at the rally, we need things like CNA. CNA is what, 6-8 weeks? We need to start doing programs with CNAs, and because there is a shortage in Alabama with these tech jobs, with CNAs, and also with the welding. And if this state ever, if it ever, and we're nudging closer, Louisiana just got the Affordable Care Act, and we're in such bad shape here in Alabama. Sooner or later, they're going to have to implement the Affordable Care Act before the feds come in and take it over. It's that bad. We're already operating at the bare minimum. We're about to lose it. We're on the verge of the feds taking it over. But once they implement something like that, there's really going to be a shortage of nurses and things like that. So for them to abandon these tech jobs and these tech fields, and these fields where we can get some of the people that's not 4-year college ready into some type of certification with a skill that they can take anywhere they go. If you're a certified welder, you could work anywhere. You can take that skill anywhere. You don't have to stay in Huntsville. You know, we'd love you for you to stay and help the local economy, but we need to give these kids an out. We don't need to just throw them away. I feel like a lot of kids are being thrown away. You know, if they're not getting with the program, they're just getting pushed to the side.
And, you know, just to share this with you, because I don't want anybody to say that I didn't give correct information, but now tech programs are in the individual's high schools, but I don't believe what's going on is I don't think that they have as many students enrolled because, you know, they're not able to offer as many programs as they offered at the Huntsville Center for Technology. So we dropped the ball because, you know, and I want to say this too, that a lot of people don't know. And, you know, one thing about it, when you do something and you enhance the program or you continue in a program that was started before you got into town, give that person credit. Green Power was started by Eddie Turner, the director at Huntsville Center for Technology, who's now retired. But you would not know that Green Power Car was one of his initiatives because no one ever talked about that.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of that go around. I've seen people come up with ideas, and people throw the idea away or shoot the idea down. Then a year, 2 years later, here they come back with a revised version of the same thing the person put forth.
But we need that Husky Center for Technology open back. And one thing that we need to do that we, I don't believe they're doing, you must not be consulting with the industry that need these skilled workers, because if you were consulting with them and collaborating and had a relationship with them, you would understand that that tech center was needed. And, we have to have these conversations and have these people at the table with us so we'll know what the industry needs. So we'll make sure that Huntsville is providing blue-collar workers as well as white-collar workers.
Yes. I mean, Huntsville is a tech city. And look over there in Morgan County, all those major plants up and down that river. I mean, there is a shortage of welders anyway nationwide. But and like I said, we got a shortage of not only just welders in Alabama, we have that shortage of nurses' assistants as well.
We got a lot of shortage because we're not identifying with that market, and that's one of the things we need to do. We need to make sure that we're identifying needs for all of our students and not just a particular set. And I will even go as far to say, we need to quit saying STEM and say STEAM, because art needs to be added into that, because a lot of kids go to college for art.
Yes.
We need to identify with what the kids are doing and what they're good at, because whatever they're good at, they're going to excel at it. That's, and one thing about it, you got to love what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
You want to live what you're doing. If you put them into a box and you say, this is what you're going to do, eventually, if they don't like it, they're going to walk away from it. Talk about one thing. Before the show is over, because it's very important to me. I'm really disappointed in the fact that we have a middle school and high school located on the same campus.
You mean with the new Jemison?
Yeah, the new Jemison and Mechanism, a middle and a high school located on the same campus. And see, what frustrates me even more about that is, first and foremost, everyone's excited about this new high school. Well, I would get excited, too, if that's what was advocated for us in the first place, but it wasn't. See, Johnson was getting a facelift. They were going to get remodeled. It was like a 15.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay, but you know what happened? They went to the DOJ because they needed a new Grissom, because they said Grissom is busting at the seams. Well, when they went to the DOJ and said, we're getting ready to build a new Grissom, and they had to go to them because of the court order, well, DOJ said, well, if you build a new high school in South Huntsville, you got to build a new high school in North Huntsville. So that's why we got a new high school. We didn't get a new high school because, they wanted to build us a new high school. They wanted us to get a remodeled Johnson, which would have been fine with me if you could have took the money, remodeled the school, and gave us some more programs. Everything new and everything that glitters is not great for you. We are less than a mile away from a rock quarry that they blast every day. And we had a city councilman, Mark Russell, who fought with the city of Gurley to keep a rock quarry away from their school. But you, a city councilman in Huntsville, and you didn't fight to keep the rock quarry away from Johnson High School. So I have a problem with that. And my biggest issue with the Middleton High School is the fact that you have middle school students on a campus with high school students. And let's be realistic. Some of those young ladies are going to look mature, but they're going to be in middle school. We should not have in middle school students interacting on the same campus. And only in North Huntsville is a middle and a high school put on a campus together. Nowhere else but North Huntsville.
It seems like they should have built two.
Exactly. But they have two for one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they And those schools are so closely aligned that the kids are not, they can't help but interact with each other because the schools are so close together. And then, you know, another problem I have with that is boxed us in. Grissom is built down in South Huntsville, and they have room for economic development around the high school. But here we are, we're boxed in. We don't have anywhere for any economic to, you know, happen. And
hold on 1 second. Hold on. I hate to cut you off. Seems like we got a caller. We got a caller on the line. Caller, you want to introduce yourself? You got a question for me or either the guest, Michelle Watkins, candidate for District 1 School Board?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. My name is Chris Horn. Got a question for the candidate.
Okay.
So this is an election season that's coming up toward the end. A couple questions. One, how do you feel about the process so far? Are you enjoying the process, Ms. Watkins?
And what particular process? You mean just the running for office?
Yes, running for office.
It's a lot of work, but it's worth it. It's for my community. It's to make our schools better. So, you know, hey, I knew what I was getting into when I entered this race. So let me just say it's a lot of hard work, but I'm learning a lot, and I'm enjoying it.
Okay. My last question. There are a lot of different organizations, sororities, fraternities, groups on all sides of town doing so many different things. But everyone's really interested in this race. How do you plan on bringing them together after you are elected? And I'll just sit back and listen.
If I win District 1 Huntsville School Board seat, my plan is to engage the fraternities and sororities as well as other service organizations within the community to come in and help mentor and tutor our students. And with the exception of them getting, you know, background check done to ensure that they can be in the school, and to just, you know, let them know that we really right now need all the help we can get in North Huntsville with our kids. Right now, the education level is not where it should be, but it can be. It's going to take some work, but it's not something that we can't do if we come together as a community and work to give our kids a future.
Okay.
I want to ask our caller. You can feel free to stay on if you want. I wanted to ask you something that your opponent had mentioned, and something that interests me. And we were talking about it at the Unity rally. What's missing from the economic component of North Huntsville? I know you're into the education, but don't we also need some type of we need a shot in the arm in District 1, something with economics? It's the economics there, because economic factors into the education. So what's missing on the economic side from District 1, from your perspective?
First and foremost, Marcus, we got to get our schools to improving into the, you know, economic development is centered around communities. And no one wants to come into a community and do economic development when you have failing schools.
True.
No one wants to come and do economic development when, you know, you stayed on failing this for years. So what we've got to focus and identify on is improving our schools so we can improve our property values, which will lower our insurance costs, and at the same time, it'll attract businesses to come in to North Huntsville and open up and provide economic development. You know, my opponent seems to think economic development is building two new schools. That's not economic development.
Economic development is putting those kids' parents to work.
You go. It's not building the school. But
well,
I believe we need economic development in North Huntsville. It's a lot of things we need to improve our quality of life, as well as we need some things to encourage and keep the millennials in our area town. So first and foremost is working on the schools and engaging the community and getting those conversations going and getting our kids back on track. And this is something that we can do. It's not hard to do. It's simple. It's a lot of work, but it's something we can do But we got to put the work in. And when you keep people out of the schools because you don't want them to know there's a problem, then the only thing you do is create a bigger problem.
Yes. Okay, I want you to touch on, you touched on it yesterday. I want you to touch on having the resource officers or just plainclothes police, having the police. What do you think about the introduction by the mayor and his suggestion, and as well as the police chief, to have more police officers in the school and to do and just to start arresting kids, basically, and start putting them in the criminal justice system at an early age? In my personal opinion, I think we can handle that, and I trust teachers, administrators, and principals to do this. We don't need law enforcement at a time in our history where law enforcement is heavy-handed, not only physically, but they're heavy-handed with that paperwork.
Well, I'm kind of shocked, you know, because when the mayor gave his comments to the judge back in May of 2014, he said Michael Wardensky was doing a great job and Huntsville schools was thriving. Now you're saying we need police officers in the schools. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You got to tell if it's a problem or if it's not a problem. To elaborate on that, you know, the Huntsville schools tell the teachers and the parents they can't do discipline because of the consent order. That is not what the consent order said. The consent order said discipline has to be implemented the same throughout Huntsville schools. And do we need police officers in the school? When I taught at Johnson, we had two police officers, Officer Ray and Officer Dykes. And let me tell you, those two police officers were two of the best. They communicated with the kids. They talked to the kids. The kids respected them. So to say we need a lot of police officers, I wouldn't say that, because we had two resource officers in the school. And when I say those kids loved them, they did, because they talked and interacted with them. It's about relationships with these kids. Kids know if you love them. They know if you care about them. They know when you're jiving with them and you could care less. So we need people in our schools that care about our kids and that are looking out for our kids' best interest. And what we need to do is we don't need to be focusing on police officers. We need to be focusing on education.
And I just hate, like I said, in this time in history, in our history, it's just the wrong time to introduce police officers. These kids are going to be coming up off of a summer where we've seen death after death, and we have to have these talks with them, and they know, like you said, they can smell a rat when you're lying to them, and they see all these things going on. And I just think it's wrong to, and I think that would further traumatize them just by having those police officers there. It just creates a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I will say this. When I was at Johnson and they had the resource officers there, it was only two resource officers, and I can't remember anything that we had a problem where they had to call in riot gear. I'd never seen that. They, like I say, they had interaction with the police officers, and they had relationships. So I think, you know, more so than the mayor worrying about putting more police officers in school, the mayor needs to be focused on running the city like he always says he does and let Huff City Schools run the board, because he won't get involved in anything in several conversations that we tried to have with him, the Johnson Alumni Association, about the name change. And he told us adamantly five or six times, I have nothing to do with the school. I have nothing to do with the school. So
until it's convenient.
Later, something to do with the school.
Okay. Now I talked to your opponent. We didn't touch on it as much on this show, but we talked about me and her talked about the closing of Johnson. She said it was a very painful situation for her and a very emotional one when it happened. But she said that she was outvoted. It was not really much she can do. She could have done because of the vote. But she also added, I want to get your take on that, but she also added that there were going to be some murals painted in the new Jemison of some of the memories of Johnson. So tell us about what you thought about her doing the process, which she stated the process of Johnson closing had began before she came into office. Okay, tell us about that. Tell us about that, and then I want you to touch on to your ideas for that Johnson High School location.
Well, let me just say this. My opponent is not being truthful and forthcoming. The year before the name change was ever put up, my opponent approached myself, Glenn Moore, and Felicia Logan inside the concession stand at Johnson High School. And she said, hey, I want to run a quick idea by you all and tell me what you think. What y'all think about changing the name Johnson? So Mr. Moore, Felicia, and I, we looked at her and we was like, what are you talking about changing the name of Johnson? Why would we want to change the name? Oh, it ain't nothing. I was just wanting to ask y'all a question. So a year down the road, we started hearing rumblings of name change. The first thing we were told on the Alumni Association was the Johnson family wants their, the Johnson family wants their name off the building. Well, we located a Johnson family member. Matter of fact, Tommy Johnson, who is James Oliver Johnson's nephew, he owns Johnson Pools here in Huntsville. We asked him, he said, no, no one's never talked to us. So then she said, well, we were at a board meeting, and some parents from South Huntsville came, and they said they wanted Johnson's name changed. Now, why would some parents from South Huntsville want Johnson's name changed to North Huntsville? So then we were told that all new schools get new names according to Huntsville City Schools policy. So we were at the board meeting, myself, Casey Brown, who was the Johnson alumni president, Paul Proctor, Felicia Logan, Lynn Holmes, O.C. Maddox, Mr. Moore, Chris Horn. It was a lot of us there. And we went up and we asked, if the policy says all new schools get new names, is Grissom getting a new name? And Jenny Robinson, who was the representative for Grissom at that time, she's now city councilwoman, she slammed her hand on the desk and she said, Grissom's not getting a new name because Grissom isn't a failing school. Go worry about educating your kids instead of talking about a name.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, that happened.
Wow.
And you know what our representative did? She sat there and didn't say one thing. She never said one time she wanted to keep the name of Johnson. She voted along with them to change the name.
Okay.
So it was not in the works beforehand. This is something that, this is not something that was in the works before she got there. This was something that was approached to her, and she accepted it. And as a board representative, what I would have done is, if someone came and they wanted, I would have spoken with my constituents first and told my constituents what was going on. But she didn't do that. She didn't have one town hall to address the name change of Johnson. Not one town hall.
Okay, we got another caller. We got a caller. Maybe they're just calling in to listen. Caller, you want to introduce yourself, or are you just listening to the show? Okay, maybe they're just listening to the show.
I can identify myself. My name is Peter Proctor, and I'm just listening in to the show right now.
Okay. Yeah, we were just talking about the closing of Johnson, and Ms. Watkins' opponent said that it was a very emotional process for her, with it closing, and it had started before she had got there, and she was basically outvoted, and there was nothing else that she could do because they already had a quorum without her. And I was just asking Ms. Watkins about that, and she just explained how she felt about it, and she didn't think that the current District 1 board member was not being truthful about that. Now, my next question is, have you heard anything about what she said about painting these murals of throughout Jemison, these murals, and she used that with an S, of the memories of Johnson? Have you heard anything about that, or is any local artist going to be used? Just how are they going to go about that, or is that just an idea?
I hadn't heard anything, but it's the ultimate slap in our face because you didn't keep our name, but you kept our jaguar and you kept our colors. And then you went and did a comical jaguar instead of the jaguar that we always had, which was the animal, you know, the full-size picture. you're going to do a comical picture of a jaguar with long whiskers, and you keep our school colors. If you're going to change it, change everything. You know, if you don't want to be associated with Johnson, as long as you say Jaguars and it's in North Huntsville, people are going to associate that as Johnson Jaguar. And my thing is, the community didn't have any communication, like with the name, just like the community has no communication about the mural. We hadn't heard nothing about it.
See, okay, I'm going to. Yes, communication. Yeah, town halls for new ideas about what to do would have been very helpful. But I'm gonna say what she would say. It, you know, in not so much as in her defense, but in her own words, she was stated that school was gonna be lost, that no one can take your memories. But some people have a stronger connection to the actual physical place than they do the memory, or they have an equal connection physically as they do with the memories of the place. But that's one statement I know she had made, that can't nobody take the memories that you had there. And she basically said it was going to be lost, and it was just absolutely no saving it.
Lee had their memories and their school name. Because when they tried to change Lee's name, it stopped. Grissom has their memory and their school name. Why? Because their board member stopped. Now let me go a little further. Butler don't have their memories in their school. And Johnson don't have their memories in their school because it was taken away from us. It was snatched from us. And what's right? No, it wasn't. You know, I could have accepted the fact if you would have came to the community and said, hey, we're going to change the name, bottom line. Let's get you involved in this process. Make us some recommendations for some names. I could have recommended Blue for Council.
That would have been a great name right there.
But you know what? That was never on the table. That was never on the table. So Alabama A&M University was never on the table because they already had it made up in their mind, which Paul Proctor, who was on the naming committee after we fussed, they had the naming committee members from South Huntsville that had no identity with Johnson High School. They lived in South Huntsville. One member did graduate from Johnson, and he lived in South Huntsville, but Paul Proctor served on that committee and tried to make recommendations for names and was shut down. They said no. So, see, Jemison was already the name that they wanted. But my thing is, let's identify with somebody in our community that has done something in our community. You haven't done nothing in Johnson. What has Mae Jemison did in North Huntsville? Nothing. We could have named it after William Hooper Council. Our kids could have had an opportunity to understand who William Hooper Council was, and at the same time, it could have offered an opportunity for A&M to adopt, you know, William Hooper Council and help those kids along.
That right there sounds like, man, that would have been the ultimate power move and the ultimate thing to happen for North Huntsville to name it after council and connect it with Alabama A&M University. It probably would have increased more students there. They could have put money into that. And they may, as much land as Alabama A&M got, they may have donated a land in a more, you know, a better prime spot. But I tell you what, like you were just saying, they renamed it and all that, but they kept the Confederate general's name in North Huntsville. They kept Lee High School a Confederate general, but you got rid of the rest of them. That's what I can't understand. If we got that Confederate general over there, then we should have had somebody who stood up to those type of ideals, like a William Council.
Exactly. Yes. But that's what happened, you know. But if our board member would have spoken up for us, or at least offered us an opportunity to suggest names, which she didn't do, and like I said, she never held the town hall. And that's one of the things that I have on my platform. If I'm elected school board member, I will have quarterly town hall to inform the community what's going on. And I won't have it in just one location every quarter. I will rotate around throughout my district. it's important for your constituents to know what's going on, and you're only as good as the information that you provide.
Yes. Now, what ideas would you have for now that Johnson is lost? What ideas have you heard the board talk about or the community talk about? What does the community, I mean, forget the board and forget them downtown. What does the community have? What are you hearing out there that the community wants to have happen with the Johnson High School location?
Well, we want something viable. We want something that's going to, you know, increase our property values. And at the same time, we want something that's going to be, you know, productive, help the community, make the community a better place to live. We don't want that building just to sit there and die away and have grass grow up around it.
I'm hoping they don't just turn their backs. So that's the biggest thing I'm afraid of, is now that they've moved on, that they just going to just not even tend to it anymore. They might even stop cutting the grass. You know, they may just abandon it, and that would be sad if that happened.
I think it would be good if we could put some kind of business incubator over there to help entrepreneurs who are trying to start off in the community, need some guidance, need a place to get their business started. A business incubator would be good, as well as if we had somewhere where we could teach GED classes, self-development classes, computer classes. We need something that's going to help our community. We don't need just a gym, and we aren't going to open it up for the gym, and that's it, because that's a nice business to put it to use. So that's what
like
I'm productive.
Like you said before, too, also teaching something in the performing arts. And we got Mr. Proctor on the phone. I know he has talked about a performing arts district. So that would be something great, too, to do something there with the performing arts if need be, because Huntsville is a place where you're going to need recreation. And we got the Civic Center. There's plays over there every night, just about. So they could be getting some of this local talent here. So I would love to see the place thrive, just like you said, something that's going to be viable, because I just have this feeling, you know, maybe they'll do right. But if history serves anything, they're going to slowly turn their backs on it, and they're not going to put a dime in it now that they got something else going. I mean, they killed the name already, you know, so don't expect them to try to keep it alive. I just don't think they're going to do it. It's going to be up to the community to make sure something good happens with that place. Maybe A&M could step in and do something. They could rename it a council training center or something, and have these very different things in it that you were just talking about. That would be a great idea, but I would not depend on the city doing anything else with it now that they've turned their back and abandoned the name.
But I want to say this one thing before we get off the radio. You know, my opponent told you that this was in the works before she ever got in office, and there was nothing she could do, and she was outvoted. I'll tell you something she could have did that she didn't do, and this is a new story I heard today from you. I never heard this. She could have told her constituents that if it was true. If my back was the wall and I was on that board and they pushed my back against the wall and said, this was in the works before you came on board, and that can't be true, because she's in her eighth or ninth year in office. So you mean tell me this was all the way down the road and she didn't know nothing about it? But what I'm saying is, what I would have done is came to my community and say, listen, they had a plan in place before I came on board, and first thing they told me is they're changing the name of the school. So I'm coming to let you know this is what I'm up against, and I don't have enough votes to save the name. People could have respected her for that if that was the truth. But my problem with that is, we kill a news after the fact. You never said
this. Yeah, she definitely said, she definitely stated on the show, and if anybody wants to know, they can go back and listen to the show. She said it plain as day that the closing of Johnson was way in the works before she got there, and that she could not outvote them. They already had a quorum without her vote, and it was absolutely nothing she could do. She stated that, you know, the truth to that, you know, I'll let the fact checkers figure that out, but I definitely can tell you that that is her statement that is on there. And she may have said it more than once on that show, that this was already being done way before she got there.
Uh-huh. You know, it's just hard for me to believe that, because I mean, the fact that she's been on board long enough for her to know what's going on with the schools, and this is something that she should have defended as our board member, or she should have came to her constituents and said, listen, this is what's going on, and I need your help. Because you know what? We would have been 100% behind her. But, you know, you can't be behind somebody if they don't let you know what's going on.
Yeah, you got it. If you want supporters, you want them just as informed as you are. You know, I can't myself, when I'm working on something, I can't do nothing with a supporter that's not informed about what's going on. They're just going to get in the way.
Well, did you know Ms. McCauley was elected in 2008?
Yeah, it's been 8 years. So, like you said, if Johnson was going to be closed way before she got there, you know, so you got to go back past 2008. So that sounds like the closing of Johnson has been in the works for over a decade.
Well, I tell you now, Dr. Dawson was representing the district before her and his wife when he got sick. And one thing I know about Dr. Dawson, he always told the truth, and he always represented North Huntsville. So that was not in the works under his watch, I know for a fact. But, you know, that's a story.
Uh-huh. Okay, the two callers we got online, do y'all want to say anything? Well, before that, Michelle,
yes.
tell our listeners, before we get to the callers, Ms. Watkins, could you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can support your campaign?
Yes, I'm on Facebook, Michelle L. Watkins, candidate for Huntsville City Schools District 1. I have a web page. It's www.watkins.district1.com. And they can reach out to me. I am more than willing to talk to anyone that needs to understand what my platform is, what I plan on doing when I get in office. I'm open to talking with you.
Okay. Okay, caller number one, you want to say anything in closing of the show?
Yes, caller number one.
Chris Warren, I'm so impressed with this candidate. I'm very excited that we have a candidate that has really and truly has a firm grasp on the facts and a very clear vision for how we need to go forward. I would definitely, before I leave the conversation, would like to know how we could possibly get a recording that you speak of. Is that on your blog talk podcast?
The only thing you would have to do with, you just go to blogtalkradio.com/Marcus Eccles.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and all the shows are archived, so they're on there, or you can go on my page. You'd have to scroll back a few days. I post a whole lot. But on my LinkedIn, I haven't posted anything there lately. She should be right at the top. Her show should be at the top. And but it's easy to find. You can just go to my Facebook page. That's Marcus J. Eccles. I have a chessboard up there for the icon. And I think on the side on the information about me, I have my blog talk up there. But you just go to blogtalkradio.com/Marcus Eccles, and you can see all the shows I've ever done. Okay, Mr. Proctor, you got something you want to say in the closing of this show? And guest Michelle Watkins, candidate for District 1 School Board. I don't know if Mr. Proctor's still there or not. Okay, he may not be there. Okay, Mr. Proctor, you there? He's probably gotten off the line. So with that, we're going to close the show up. And it's been a pleasure having Michelle. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I had a call to come in. It was on my phone. Got cut off. But first of all, I want to say this, is that everything that Ms. Watkins has said is absolutely true. Absolutely true. I've been basically watching the move of the Johnson High situation, and I've checked the fact and have discussed and even had personal conversation with Ms. McCauley, and Michelle Watkins is dealing with facts and not fiction. I'll also like to let everybody know that Mrs. Watkins has my endorsement for whatever it's worth. For those who know Peter Proctor, trust his opinion, his direction, and his heart for the city of Huntsville, I encourage you to uncompromisingly vote, do your homework, check her out, and give her your vote. You know, and I want to encourage you, Michelle, to keep up the good work. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to catch the later part of the show. Mr. Eccles, keep up the good work. Thank you, sir.
I definitely will, and I'll share this to Michelle's page as soon as I get finished with this. And you can check it out there. And like I said, the candidate has a lot to say, and it seems like what she's saying conflicts with what the current office holder is saying. So I look forward to, you know, the fact checkers on both sides sorting that out, and they're both telling two different type of stories, and I'm just glad that I had both of them on. The people deserve to hear from both of them, and I tell people, like I said on her show, do your homework. You know, do your homework. Both of these candidates have a vision, and just do your homework and see which one is right and fits for you. We're the decision-making process in District 1. Something has to change. There's a lot of things going on, some good, some not so good. I can tell you one thing, police officers in schools, that's not a good thing. That's never a good thing. And I really hope something happens with Johnson High School. I would just hate to see that school rot, you know, stop cutting the grass. Next thing you know, windows get broken out, and then the city and the school start going in there, tearing out chairs and floors and boards and anything else that they need, start using it as a basically a school junkyard. I've seen that happen in communities too. They build a new school, abandon the old school, but if they need something right quick, instead of buying it, they'll go to the old school and start tearing things out. Let's not let that happen.
No, we don't need that to happen.
Okay, with that, it's been great having you, Michelle Watkins, and you're happy to come on. And if you candidate, if you're challenger, I mean, the city, you're the challenger, but if that y'all want to debate live online, I'm here. I'm pretty sure she's okay. Listening, or maybe some of her supporters listening, and they'll have some rebuttal. But keep up the good work, and keep the fight going, and I wish you the best of luck, just like I wish Ms. McCauley the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots Mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip-hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rap.
Bringing voices to power.